Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Tonight, we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score, which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia on the Sports History Network. And we're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats magazine, and I'll be the host for your show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150 plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats magazine. A football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and in Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Lard. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squire. Joe, welcome to the show today.
Evan, good morning to you, sir.
How are you? I got it early. Got an early start for you out there. I'm glad you glad you're able to join us.
I spent a lifetime in construction. 7 a.m. is a good start time. By the way, I don't know if you noticed last show, I made my bio. If you look at my line, yours says Bob Swick. Mine says Joe Squires, senior contributing writer.
I liked it. And you are a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats magazine. You've been with us almost since the beginning, when we took over the magazine back in late 2008, early 2009, right?
Somebody on a Facebook football thread was talking about the 84 set. And I'm like, man, and I mentioned, I go, I called out the Gridiron Greats magazine. I'm like, I wrote an article on the 25th anniversary for the 84 set for Gridiron Greats. I'm like, wait a minute, 1984 plus, that's 2009. Oh my gosh, that was 14 years ago. Yeah, I kind of did the math in my head.
All right. We've been doing the magazine for quite a while now. It's a long time. You know, It's interesting. Just a little off script. I posted an article on our chatboard VFC there on Sports Collectors Digest 50th anniversary from 1973 to their current. They're still publishing it 2023, and 50 years is a long time to be publishing, even though they've had several different publishers. I hate to say it. I know the publication is just a shell of what it used to be, but in its glory days, 200 pages, some issues of ads, of all sorts of articles, pricing. What a great tool it was for collectors back then, before the internet days. And I distinctly remember I did write for them for basically 3 years, 90, 91, and 92. And to me, those were the glory years for the beginnings of the football card explosion with regards to all the new information came out and so on and so forth. And I was glad to be part of it. And then fortunately or unfortunately, when they got new management took over, they got rid of all the freelancers, including myself. And then, as you know, I went into my Football Times newsletter from 1993 to 1999. So it was an interesting experience writing for them. But I do have some good memories of that. And I'm feeling very old, realizing that was 30 years ago that I actually worked for them. So I was a much younger lad at that time, writing and having a good time.
Time is the enemy, Bob. Strikes down both beggars and king.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. Snap your fingers and time just flies. It's amazing. But anyways, what I want to do before our guest, we start talking to our guest, We're going to finish up our top five cards, and I do have in front of me the top five cards. So I'm going to do my number three, and then I'll have you do your number three, and then we'll go conversely back and forth.
Okay.
My number three all-time great card is this beautiful 1967 team card.
Now, Philly.
What I truly enjoyed as a kid is the green and yellow in this color. It was just so incredibly fascinating to see coming out of a black and white world of TV. And I know I said this numerous times on the show. When I was a kid, I would put the football cards, the teams playing, on the top of the TV set. So I would see what they were. And I can still remember my father would go up to the TV with and he wore glasses all the time. And he would look at him and he would see the teams playing. And he would watch when he could the games with me. So long story short, it was pretty cool when the Packers were on TV. And I could still hear him say, "Oh, I like the color on that card. That's a sharp green and yellow card." And then conversely, 67 Phillies backs, anybody recognizing them can recognize them by their brown background. Mm-hmm. 64 Phillies are blue, 65 are red, 66 are green, and the 67s are brown. So something
I will admit, I don't think I ever noticed. I mean, I know that they're brown, 67, the obverse is brown, but I don't think I ever noticed that pattern among the years. That's really cool.
There's blue, red, blue, red, green, and then the brown. So there were great background colors there. Joe, number three on yours.
That's such a cool story, Bob. I love that. And it made me laugh because I would do the same, except I would have, you know, and I would have my cards laid out on the ottoman in front of us. So if the Seahawks were playing, you know, the Steelers, and I distinctly remember, the Steelers Cowboys Super Bowl is one of the first games I ever watched with my parents. And it happened to be a Super Bowl. And by then I had a lot of, quite a few football cards. So I had the players. So if the Steelers were playing, every Steeler card that I owned would be out. And then every Cowboy card would be out on the same large ottoman we had. And then if like Bradshaw threw, I'd turn to my dad, I'm like, "I got that card." And I'd kind of point at it. And by about halftime, I'd be like, I know you have the Bradshaw card, Joe. You know, like can I watch the game and drink a beer? So
That's great. Such great memories. I just don't put my cards in front of the TV set anymore, watching football on any given Thursday. Any given Thursday, Sunday, or Monday now. You know?
Yeah.
That's the classic two games on Sunday. And
you do a really good job. You've talked about this before, but of, you know, not putting your cards in a plastic tomb. And somebody the other day put, like the piece of gum, you know, that the guy on Twitter, the 70s, you know, the 70s guy, I think his name is, and he's really cool about just putting up really good memories. And he put up a piece of gum from a wax pack the other day. And he's like, "Anybody reading this, you know, knows the taste of this." And I was like, "Man, and the smell." And I talked about it once, when I wrote the article for Gridiron about doctoring of the 48 leaf set. And one of the things is like smelling a card, because if somebody's, given it a chemical bath, it will smell different. Cards should have a smell to them. And as weird as it is, one of the best memories I have is just smelling the card, especially the gum, and just cards just have a smell that just brings back a lot of memories. So, as I mentioned, last time, I kind of went Wheel of Fortune on this, on this exercise of ours, our top five favorite. And I went, kind of like, in the final prize, how in Wheel of Fortune, they give you the RSTLNE. I went, there is the Hall of Fame, the Mount Rushmore of football, the 35 Chickle Nagurski, the 58 Tops Jim Brown, the 65 Tallboy Joe Namath. And obviously the 57 Tops Unitas star, or, interchangeable with the 77 Steve Largent card. And then I went outside of that. I'm like, those are kind of the norms. So for me to say my favorite card would be the Chickle Nagurski, for example, be kind of a layup, I thought. So I went outside of the RST LNE. So my number three card, and I've mentioned this before, like when I wrote an article on the 57 Topps set, if you are a true collector and you are collecting that set one card at a time, you begin to know the nuances of the set. And in the 57 set, it was the Zeke Bratkowski. You know that the Zeke Bratkowski is the hardest card in that set. So my number three card is the 52 Bowman, large or small, number 144, Jim Lansford.
Yeah.
And if you collect that set, or if you are an avid football collector, you know exactly what the Jim Lansford card looks like. And you know how difficult that card is. 52 Bowman, any card divisible by 9 plus 1, so card 9, card 18, 19, 27, 28, is incredibly difficult to find because of where it lies on the sheet, on the right border and the left border. And 144 is divisible by 9, 16 time, which means it's in the bottom right corner, getting banged around. The 144 card is a population 6 in PSA 8. Wow. It is the least populous card in the entire set with two higher. So my nod to the 52 Bowman, number 144, Jim Lansford. A hard, hard card to collect when I was putting that set together.
And that's a big reason why I kept starting and stopping my 52 large set. I finally gave up one way or the other. And my 52 small Lansford is a beater beyond compare. So that's definitely a card I got to try to upgrade over the next few years if I can find him. And you're right. I mean, it's a ridiculous card to find, and he's, literally a common, but unfortunately, yeah, he commands just this incredible price for that set. So it's amazing. Truly,
you're
amazing.
Absolutely right.
Amazing. I'm gonna go to my number two now, and this is no surprise to anybody. 1965 was the first year I started collecting cards, as everyone knows the story. And my second favorite card is the 1965 Philly Bart Starr card.
Mm-hmm.
And getting back to what I was saying as far as the background was concerned, the back of the cards are red.
Oh.
So I just loved when I got this. And this is actually a card from my original pack pulls over the years.
Oh, wow.
I just thought that card was so cool, the way he looked and he had the ball. And I can remember as a kid when I used to throw the ball in the backyard, I would try to, yeah, I would have that motion or whatever, saying, geez, I could be Bart Starr one day and throw the ball like him. But reality set in pretty quick for me in football. So that was not going to be meant to be. But that was my number two card. Joe.
A young mustachioed Bob Swick in the backyard playing football. My number two card, and this again harkens back to when you put a set together, you realize the nuances. My number two card is the 1950 Bowman Doak Walker number one card.
Okay.
Really number one card. Hard to find. Again, goes back to that theory of kids rubber banding their cards, putting them in numerical order, rubber banding their cards if they collected. And also, I loved the 48 Leaf Doak Walker, but at some point, and they consider that to be his rookie card, but at some point, you begin to realize the 50 Bowman Doak Walker should be his rookie card, because the 48 Leaf card is him as an SMU player. It's his college card. So his first pro card is the 50 Bowman. Really tough card, and I remember kind of discovering that and then deciding, that was a card really worth having in high grade. That I really appreciated it. It's a pop 19 in PSA 8 with zero higher. That tells you how difficult that pole position card on the sheet, the number one sheet, upper left hand corner, in this case with the 50 Bowman. And I know that because I have all four sheets of the 19 uncut sheets of the 1950 set. So I know where the Doak Walker card sits. And a little bit of a shout out to the number 100 card in the 50 Bowman set, the Sammy Baugh. That was the last card in that set that I collected. And I love slinging Sammy Baugh. And it was just a good tribute for that to be the final card.
Great. That's great. Great card. Great card. 50 Bowman, beautiful set.
Yes.
My number one, no surprise.
Of course.
Caps, name it. From my pool.
That is a good looking card, Captain.
Yeah, it's the corners are kind of soft, but it's still held up over the years. And I just always loved the back of the 75 with the little cartoon guys. And I studied the back of those cards. Oh. I read them probably a couple thousand times if I read them once. And I'll tell you, what the one memory I always have is walking into the little candy store in Brantford, Connecticut, and I saw the packs, and I bought one pack of each of the Philly and the Topps football. And it's something I do miss, I got to say, with no Topps anymore and no Phillies. I do miss buying a pack of cards and just opening them. It's just not the same for me to walk into a Walmart and see a $9.99 pack of 24 cards to buy and pull open.
Yep.
And I'm opening up these packs. I can't even figure out what the inserts are. I've never heard of half of the guys on the teams. And I'm like, wow, this is
nobody pays attention to the back of the cards anyway, either. And you just mentioned, I mean, the pattern with the Phillies and memorizing the back of the card too. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, it's tough. And on VFC, Vintage Football, the other day, our chat room, I mentioned, you know, just there are 148 variations of Tom, 148 cards that could lay claim to being Tom Brady's rookie card. And that's from 2000. That's 23 years ago. I mean, how many, you know, how many Patrick Mahomes rookie cards are there? My number one card, my passion for the 48 Leaf set is known. And the best card out of that set, my favorite card, is this. And this card happens to be up in Heritage Auctions right now. The Slingin' Sammy Baugh. And this one is the maroon jersey version, which they just started, you know, they started labeling those a while ago. But that one has been on a diet. The border's a little thin. But my love for the 48 Leaf set runs deep, runs strong. And that Slingin' Sammy Baugh is one of my favorites in this set. A little bit of a shout out to the Sid Luckman card, the number one card in the set. But just a passion for the 48 Leaf set, the uncut sheet of it, the dimensions of it. And then obviously, as I wrote in Gridiron Greats, how card doctors have destroyed the integrity of that set.
Remember what I always said when I was putting that set together, I never, ever at any show I went to, or anything I bought through the mail, I never saw a card better than X condition. So I am just totally amazed, oh boy, how all these near mint cards came out of nowhere.
We're on video. You can use air quotes now. I am totally amazed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, that's a great trip down memory lane with those cards. And great, great, great cards, great memories. And I, to this day, one last thought. The two binders I open the most and look at, because I have everything in my binders.
Yeah,
I go through that 64 Philly set at least every other week. My Philly album of the four sets every week, and my 65 Tops literally every other week.
Oh wow,
I just love looking at them. All right, it's time for our special guest, and we got a lot to cover with him today. Our special guest tonight lives in Northeast Ohio in a small town called Stowe. And that's where Larry Zonka was born and played his high school football, along with Tennessee Titans head coach and former New England Patriots standout Mike Bravo and golfer Ben Curtis are also from that town. He's been married for 30 years, has two grown daughters and a five-year-old grandson. He's the vice president of technical support for a company based in Texas that's in the highway roadside safety industry. He's been in the industry for 42 years. Traveled to all 50 states, plus internationally, supporting these products that his company makes. When he's not working with his family, he might find them with his football cards. He started his football card collection as a child in 1968, but like many others like him, those cards didn't survive. But later in life, he started collecting football cards from 1950 up through a few of the current sets, but not much of the newer stuff. It's mostly the older sets with the 1962 post-serial football being the primary focus. For the post-serial, he has sets, uncut panels, and complete serial boxes, among many things. His latest project is working on a PSA graded set, and the next project will be working towards a complete master set. He also collects items associated with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, footballs, numerous other football cards, as well as old wax pack wrappers, the older cards. He is being featured as the super collector in our current issue of Gridiron Greats magazine, which is in the mail and available for sale. And I'd like to welcome to you our show this morning, Mr. John Durkas. John, welcome to the show.
Bob, good morning. Thank you so much. And good morning to you too, Joe.
No, thank you.
Bob, before we get started, I gotta tell you, I love your magazine. I love your intro that you do here. And it's a real pleasure to be here. It really is.
Well, John, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk with us. And just a little background for the audience. I met John at the last Cleveland National. And as he said, along with about 10,000 other people that were walking through the show, and I did remember talking to Joe about post-serial. The story started coming back to me as we started talking about doing a super collector feature on his collection. I'm really glad we re-met again and were able to carry this out. So I want to start off, John, by asking you, can you tell our audience how you got interested in collecting football cards and football memorabilia?
Well, kind of the same as you guys. As a child, I had collected cards, as you mentioned in my intro, primarily at that time. It was 1968, and it was the corner store that a few of my friends and I would walk to, and we'd buy the Tops and the Philadelphia. I was a big Philadelphia guy as well. Now, I know that Philadelphia didn't make sets in 68, but I did acquire a couple of 68 sets. I have, through the years, got back into it, and I'm pretty heavy into it right now. It's a passion for sure. And I want to clarify one thing as well. I want to put this myth aside. Joe, I had heard that you own every single Steve Largent card that was made, except for maybe this one. Just for the record, I want to let you know that I've got the whole set. And you're missing at least one.
There's the one. I've heard about this.
I still have the damaged one here. And I also have the one that Joe's daughter made the ornament on. So I have two Largent cards, just in case somebody's asking me at a show, do you have a Steve Largent rookie card? I can't find one anywhere.
I think like 2 or 3 years ago, my daughter was really into crafting. So I grabbed a bunch of really bad, like PSA 1 and PSA 2 Largent cards. And my daughter helped me drill holes in them, run lace or, a holder through it and put little stickies on it. I made Christmas ornaments of Steve Largent cards and mailed them to about 15 of our avid friends. So Merry Christmas in the NFL.
Yeah, the two of you were talking about watching games as a child. One of the things I used to do, if you remember, TV Guide had the games that would be on TV, and they would have the roster. They'd have a little helmet of the team that was playing, and then they'd have the roster.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I'd cut out of the TV Guide the roster as I watched the games.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that. So many collectors follow that same arc, John, where it's like, we collected as kids. We had a huge collection. At some point, we discover girls. We move away from our collection. We move away. We get a career. We get a job. And then at some point, we get a little bit of discretionary income. Something sparks us, and we come back to the hobby. A little bit off script, but what was your spark that brought you back to the hobby after leaving it for a while?
Well, actually, that's right on script. It was in the early 80s, I was at a flea market, just minding my own business. And there all of a sudden, I saw 1968 Topps football cards. And it brought back so many memories. And I said, that's it. And I was back into it just that quick.
Got it.
And once I got into it, it became almost addictive. You complete the set you're looking for. Well, let me get another one. I ended up going all the way back to the 1950 Bowman. Joe, you mentioned the 50 Bowman is one of your favorites. One of my favorites as well. I pull that out and look at it quite often. Not as often as you, Bob, with your every other week on the 65 tops, but I look at them quite often. And in the course of collecting those, I stumbled upon the 1962 Post Serial Football. And at the time, it was, you know, just kind of another set. And then I learned more about it. Bob, you mentioned the Sports Collector's Digest. In 1990 and 1992, there was an article written by Don Neamey, I think you pronounce his last name. And he had focused on the pro on the post football cards. And he had a lot of information there about the number of boxes, the number of panels. And and that's what really set me off. It set me off on a trek that I'm still traveling down.
My sister for Christmas gave me an autographed Steve Largent card. That was in 99. And then by 2000, I discovered eBay. And you said you get a little bit obsessed when you circle back. And so I literally started collecting every Steve Largent rookie card. And that's where the joke comes from. I would buy every single one that hit eBay. Back in the day, we had to mail a check off. You know, I'd have to write a check and mail it to the person to get the card. So Hall of Fame collection. Tell our audience a little about, I mean, you know, 60 posts is what you're collecting, but you have a Hall of Fame collection, and I'm looking over your shoulder there. Your background's a little cooler than mine. Tell us about your Hall of Fame collection.
Well, again, it was in the early 80s when I started collecting the football cards again. And I lived in right outside of Youngstown, Ohio, which was about an hour from the Football Hall of Fame. And in 1986, I thought, well, you know, I'm this close. Let me just go to a Hall of Fame game. And at that time, the game and the induction were both on a Saturday. So the induction was in the morning, right on the front steps of the Hall of Fame. Wow. And then a couple hours later, you walk just across the backyard there, and that was the stadium. So I was hooked again. 1986, I went to my first Hall of Fame game and induction ceremony. And Joe, I haven't missed one since. Now, there were, you know, during COVID, there was no game, no induction. There were a couple of games that were canceled most recently here because of some bad field conditions. There was a strike one year. But since 1986, every game and every induction that was held, I went to it and still have as recent as just this past August.
Incredible. That's so cool. I can't imagine that. For us casual observers, do you need a ticket to view the induction, or is that a walk-up if you're just in the audience?
Well, at the time, it was a freebie. You know, we'd show up there maybe an hour before the induction. There'd be some TV cameras in the back. There'd be some bleachers set up. And it was just come in, you know, find a place to park not far away, walk over. Like I said, maybe get there an hour ahead of time, get a decent seat. But it has progressed into a pretty big deal. Like most things, it's gone corporate. You need a rather expensive ticket, actually. The ceremonies are now inside the stadium. When I would go, there was, there couldn't have been 500-700 people kind of scattered around. There's, I don't know what the number is, but I'd have to guess, you know, 5,000-7,000 people that are going to the induction. It's big business now.
Still, do you have to pay for a ticket now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Very much so.
Cool.
Yeah. And then the other part of my collection, well, one of the parts of my collection is the programs and the ticket stubs from the Hall of Fame game. You know, you think about the Super, you know, the big game of the year, the last game of the year, the championship game, but let's not forget about the very first game of the season. Now, okay, I understand it's a pregame. A lot of the guys that are playing won't make the team, but those superstars that become Hall of Famers, their very first game was the Hall of Fame game. And I collect those programs. I've got a complete run of Hall of Fame game programs from 1962 to current, and I'm working on the ticket stubs or full tickets from the 62 game all the way through current.
Wow, that's very cool. And you've got your tickets that you've saved from each game. So those, you know, the provenance is unquestionable, but you're going back to 62. That's very cool.
And those tickets are very difficult. I know several people collecting them, and they're much more difficult than the programs, in my opinion.
Yeah, just kind of a quick overview. This is the very first Hall of Fame game program.
Wow. And look who's on the front. That's outstanding.
Yeah. How about that?
I recognize that, man.
Yeah. And then the second here.
Yep.
And as I said, I've got a complete run all the way to the
beautiful
the very last one. They've changed quite a bit through the years, but
still. And that's the most recent one, John?
I'm sorry, what's that, Joe?
That's the last one. That's the most recent one. That's 2020.
Yeah, that's got all the Hall of Famers on it. You can see the reflection.
Yeah.
Keep them all in poly bags to keep them clean and safe and protect them. Would never think about getting one graded. I know that one of the big things today is grading the programs. I don't get it.
No way.
But who am I to question those that are very interested in it? But just a quick little tidbit here. I go to shows all the time, and I'm always looking for, you know, new things. There's a couple of my programs that I'm looking to upgrade a little bit. But all the programs that I have are in poly bags, and I've put a little piece of tape on the back. And little trade secret here: if you fold the corners of the tape over just a little bit, it'll allow you to pull the cover open real easily. You go to these shows and they seal that thing with industrial tape, it seems, and you can't get it apart, and you're ripping it. But I keep all my programs well protected.
Yep. That's very smart. Yeah, I've seen that when people ship programs, you know, they'll industrial tape it over. And then that tape tends to stick as to the program as you're trying to pull it out of the sleeve. Yeah, that's a good call.
Very smart to do it that way, and to see it that way. Now, John, just backing up a bit, going to your post serial collection. Let's talk a little bit about that. And I know it's pretty amazing what you have.
I think it's amazing. There's a couple of mentors that I have studied through the years that have collections quite a bit bigger than mine, but I'm pretty proud of what I've got. It started out, like I said, with just the 200 card set, and anybody that's collected it knows that there's a couple of cards in there that are pretty tough to get. There's 99 different panels that were created. And if you take every serial brand and every serial size and count the panels, that's, as I said, 99 panels. There's 528 cards different that were represented through those panels. And I've got about 30 uncut panels. I have four of the complete serial boxes. Now, this is kind of my pride and joy here. That'll bring back some memories here. The complete box.
Wow.
Very rare.
Yeah.
The large box. Yeah. Versus the single serve. Yeah.
One of the tougher boxes is the oat flakes.
Mm.
And this small 10-ounce box, if you look closely.
Yeah.
There's the crown jewel. There's the Dave Baker.
The Dave Baker. Yeah.
Toughest card. And then I've got two others here. I have a Brand Flakes. That one's a little tough. And then this one is just about impossible. I'm told that this is the only known full box of 15-ounce oat flakes.
Wow.
Wow.
A very interesting story of how I got it, but I know there's a couple of people that have the panels. the uncut panel. I think there's two or three of the uncut panels on the 15 ounce. The 15 ounce was not really issued. There are some that believe that it was. I don't know for sure, so I can't say. But my general feeling, based on what I've read and heard from others, is it was produced but not filled with cereal and issued.
Not filled with cereal and issued. Oh, interesting.
There were 99 different boxes actually issued.
That's okay. Correct. Bob, I put four sets together. I have four complete sets, ungraded. Yeah, I'm kind of old school. I still respect the ungraded cards. Now I am working on a graded set of post cereal. I've got about half the set done. When I wrote the article for you, Bob, I had about 82 or 83 cards. Since then, I've picked up a few more. So I've got about half the set done, but that's going to be a challenge to complete that set graded. And I'm not sending in my raw cards. I want to keep my cards raw. My primary set, I think if I sent my primary set in and got the whole set graded, I think most of them, if not all of them, would get grades of at least a 4 or 5. There'd probably be some 7/8 in there. But I'm going to keep those raw. But I am trying to complete a set buying cards that are already graded.
That's very good, because I think, to me, it's very important, for a collector, especially at some point, possibly those cards go back into the hobby, more affordable if they're not graded, so on and so forth. But at the same time, the history behind the cards are even stronger based upon it. So that's a really good idea. Now, one question with that, with the post, are you going to attempt a complete 528 MasterCard set? That's a question. So
yeah,
monster.
I think at some point I will. I keep telling myself when I retire, I could retire, but I'm having too much fun working right now. So I'm gonna keep working for a while. I enjoy what I do. But when I find myself with a little more time, I'm going to work on that master set. I think the combination of my four sets, plus I have probably 300 and some other loose cards that are extras, combined with my cereal boxes, my 30 uncut panels, I think I'm probably pretty close. But I just got to go through the exercise and assign which of my loose cards belong to which panels, and then I'll go from there. Sure. Besides the master set, I'm looking for really anything post cereal related. There's the Rice Crinkles had these little they had a passer and a kicker. I've got a few of those that I've been able to acquire. Some of the ads they had, the grocery stores had these booklets. There are four different booklets that were available.
Right.
I have all of those and a couple of other odds and ends, but there's some of these things, the grocery store displays that were available through the stores, some of the salesman samples things, those are going to be just about impossible to get. I've honestly never seen them for sale. Yeah. I know a couple of people that have them, but those are going to be tough to get. Somebody that has them is going to have to release them, I think, before they're going to be attainable for me.
John, refresh my memory. Why is the Dave Baker card so hard to find?
Well, the Dave Baker card was available on two different cereal boxes. One of them was the Oat Flakes that I showed to you, and the other is the most difficult box, and it was on a box with a Sam Baker. So the Baker box is the most difficult box. There was only two boxes or two cards on that box. It was a small size. It was a cereal that wasn't real popular, so they didn't have as many of them that were sold. And then the Oat Flakes again was the other box that the Dave Baker was on, and again that wasn't a real popular one. So it's a matter of how many of them are out there and the size of the cereal box and the popularity of the cereal box at the time. Moms would take their kids shopping and, kids would want cereal, but they'd want ones that everybody would eat. And Trugel would want to get the bigger size boxes, because the smaller ones you have to pay much the same price for, but you didn't get as much cereal. So, you know, mom would want to get the bigger boxes, the more popular cereal, and that's what we had to deal with today.
Perhaps the rarity of it. Gotcha. And sorry to go on a tangent. You mentioned a couple of mentors you've had collecting this. You know, pray tell, who was that?
Gentleman by the name of Robin Pauls. Bob, you may know him. He's a real serious collector. He has a post tens box. They had these little mini cereal boxes, and there'd be 10 of them in a saran wrapped box, kind of a tray, and the tray itself would have three cards on the bottom, and then there'd be 10 cereal boxes on top. He has one of those. He has some of the advertising things. And then got to send a shout out to Ken Marks as well. If anybody that's a serious football card collector of the 62 post here would be aware of his goalposts book. So I've learned a lot from those two guys.
Yeah, Ken Marks is a friend of the show. We've had him on. We learned a lot about the set from him. I was just curious. That world's got to be pretty small. So I assumed he was one of them. That's cool. You held up a couple things that you have, but you also, you know, Hall of Fame collection. I see, like, as I mentioned, a lot of things over your shoulder. What are your favorite things in your set? Top five, top six. What things do you love?
Oh boy, top five, top six. You know, like you guys, we've accumulated quite a bit through the years, and you know, it's tough to narrow it down. I love the Bowmans. I have a lot of sticker sets, the old 64 Wheaties sticker sets.
Ooh. Oh wow.
Canadian post cereal football, but if I had to narrow it down, I think you probably realize by now my favorite is 62 post cereal football. That's the one that I find myself spending most of my time these days on. The second one is the footballs themselves. As you can see by my background here, I've collected, my last count was about 130 of them, and I'll show you, there's you can see part of them, but if you go over to the other part of the basement here, there's you know, more there.
Oh my, I absolutely love looking around people's man caves, what they collect, what they cherish. I mean, and what you're putting on the walls, what you're hanging up, I mean, that's important to you. And every single thing over your shoulder has a story and just why it's important. And I love that.
Yeah, you know, you bring people down here and, you know, some of them are just in awe. Some of them are, oh, yeah, that's cool. You know, they don't recognize the significance of it and the time and the effort that went into it. On these footballs, there's no one strong focus that I have on the footballs. There's a lot of them that are Hall of Fame related, as you would guess. But there's old ones, there's new ones, there's college, there's pro, Canadian. I have USFL, I have XFL, Arena League, Super Bowl balls. There's an NFL kickoff, a weekend kickoff. I even have one that's a presidential ball. It has the President of the United States stamped into it. And right. I contacted Wilson. I live, about an hour 45 minutes from Ada, Ohio, where all the Wilson footballs are made. Ooh. And about 10 years ago, I had some business there. I was invited to speak at a college that's right near Ada, to their engineering department. And I contacted the Wilson company and told them why I was in town. And it turns out that Ada and this college have a good working relationship, and that was my ticket in. So I got to have a tour of the Wilson factory where they make the footballs. That was super cool. If you ever have that opportunity. Yeah, really, really. You can go on YouTube and there's different stories that show you how they make the footballs, but to watch them make it is, it's a real art, everything by hand.
Yeah, that's true.
So you named a couple, you know, sets, but you didn't name a specific thing within a set. Like your first one out of the gate was 62, post serial. What's your favorite card in that set, for example?
The 62 post serial football set, there's, you know, you got to like some of the short prints, the Sam Baker, the Dave Baker, the 74, the 93 card, you know, those are favorites. Being here in the Northeast Ohio area, card 61, Jim Brown. I like that one. There's, besides the, you know, you had asked me the top five or six, I mentioned the footballs, the Hall of Fame stuff is also a favorite. The programs, the ticket stubs that I'm working on. The Hall of Fame also put together they offered it, and I'll show it to you here.
Oh my.
You know, we talk about the cards, and this is a binder that was offered, and the cards inside are all metal. They're metallic.
Oh wow. It looks like
those are a very overlooked card set in the hobby, in my opinion, because they're metal and not too many people kept up with them over the years. Very, very difficult to find.
Yeah, I think you're right, Bob. In the front, they sent a
And you actually have the original binder for that too, which is
I do, and they sent a letter of authenticity that at the time they were issuing 2,000 sets. So this is this started back in the mid 80s, and since then you had to keep up with it every year.
Right.
And I have the most recent set that was issued, and I'm told that there's not a lot of people that have kept up with it. There's probably quite a few that had the very first few sets.
Right.
But
right.
To keep up with it, I don't think there's too many of us left. I asked the Hall if they were willing to divulge how many have ordered every year, the most recent sets, and their only answer was not many. So I don't know what that number is.
Well, to
having,
me,
having a complete set, and this binder's pretty heavy. You know, you
yeah, yeah.
Bob, yeah. You talked about your Philadelphia binder. That would be four sets.
Yeah,
I would be willing to wager this is probably about three or four times heavier with because they're metal, heavy cards.
I will admit, I've never seen that set. I've never seen that. That's outstanding. Huh. So well, every year you have to buy the update. You just go on the Hall of Fame or you order that. Well, yeah, never mind. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, for a guy that's wearing a Canton Bulldog sweatshirt, I'm surprised that you don't know that, Joe.
Hey, Kent, not everyone can. You have to aspire to be Bob Swick and know every set, every card.
I know of only one other partial set of those that recently went to auction, and I could probably count on my hand how many people I know ever collected those over the years. And when the sets got to auction, they were usually broken up because collectors would want only their player or team pieces from that set. But to have the actual master set like John has, it's rare, beyond rare. So
I'd love to see a Gridiron article just on that set, just to know more. Yeah. Just because, like I said, I've never seen it. That's outstanding.
Yeah, definitely. John, over the years, I know you've got to have some stories that you might want to share with our audience on collecting. What pops into your mind, if anything?
Well, Bob, probably the most interesting, and again, no surprise, it's going to go back to the 1962 post serial set. A few years ago, I was surfing the internet, just looking for anything and everything post serial related. And I stumbled on an article that was a story about an exhibit that was happening in downtown Battle Creek, Michigan. And Battle Creek is, so many of you would know, is what's known as the serial capital of the world. That's where Post is originated. And they had this exhibit. So I contacted it's in Calhoun County. I contacted the Calhoun County Visitors Bureau to just kind of learn more about it. And they gave me the name of an individual who had quite a bit of his collection that was part of that temporary exhibit that they had for the history of cereal. And it turned out that this gentleman was employed by Post Cereal back in the day when they made the football and baseball cards in the early 60s.
Oh, wow.
Also turned out that his wife worked there as well. So they gave me this gentleman's name, and I thought, well, let me just take a shot and see if I can get a hold of him just to kind of learn something from him, see if he might have anything that he would be willing to get rid of. So I wrote the guy a letter. I had his address. Didn't hear anything back. So waited a month, couple of months. So I thought, well, let me just try to call him. Lo and behold, he picked up the phone. At the time, the guy was 89 years old.
Oh, my.
Still had his wits about him. And he told me stories of working at Post Cereal back in the early 60s when they made these cereal boxes with cards on the back. And I was just fascinated by it all. And, of course, you got to ask him the question, well, would you be willing to part with any of that? And he was very adamant, no, he didn't want to let anything go. But he told me about his museum. He called it a museum that he had. And I can call my area museum. You guys can call your area museum. So I didn't
way less, put a whole lot of way less in. Nerdy if you call it a museum. I'm going to take that advice. Yeah.
The guy was real cordial, and I'm about 5 and a half, going on 6 hours from where he is. And he said, well, if you're ever in the area, stop by, I'll show you my museum. And I thought, wow, really? And turned out about 6 months later, I had to be in that part of the country on business. So I took him up on his offer. I called him right before I came, and he remembered me. And he said the offer was still good. So I took him up on his offer. And guys, what I saw, I can't even begin to put into words. His house was over here, and he had a barn adjacent to it. The entire top floor of the barn, row after row after row, was cereal boxes. Thousands of cereal boxes going back to the late 1800s, the early 1900s. Anything and everything that you could imagine affiliated with General Foods and Post Cereal, he had. Advertising, and I was just in awe. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And buried among all of that, I found these four cereal boxes that I showed you. And again, I said, I was just like a kid in a candy store. In fact, funny story, I mentioned to him, I said, I feel like a kid in a candy store. And he says, well, I'm sorry, if I had you some suckers, I'd offer them to you. I mean, he was just that kind of a down-home guy. So I said, if you ever decide to part with him, let me know. So I come home, and I followed up with him, 3 or 4 months later. I sent him another letter and said, hey, if you're ever interested, I'd really like to have those. And nothing happened. And I figured, well, it was just super cool to see him.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, I get a call, and he says, I'm ready to part with him. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And next thing I know, a couple of weeks later, I'm the proud owner of four cereal boxes. Now, he had everything he had wrapped in cellophane,
okay,
like shrink wrapped. And these had to be, they're in pristine condition. Probably in the early mid 60s, he shrink wrapped these things, and they're like they came off the shelf in 60 some years ago.
Wow.
Amazing.
Did he know the rarity of them?
I think he did. He had so much, Joe, so many things. I don't know that he really ever missed them. This was a few years ago, so he's in his early 90s now. I don't know how he's doing these days. He could be, he could have taken a turn from the worse. I don't know. But It's going to be very interesting to see what happens to that collection. I'm told that it might end up going to the serial museum up there. Into a real official museum to live out the rest of their lives. So we'll see. Going to be interesting to watch.
I will jump in here. We're almost out of time, Joe. You got the last question, so let's go to that.
Very quickly. What advice would you give to beginning collectors? I mean, you're down the path, obviously. What advice do you have?
Well, I'll keep it short and sweet. You got to understand, you can't have everything. So find something that you really particularly like. It's going to be a marathon, not a sprint. It's going to be slow going. You're going to have some good days, some bad days, some days that are going to be very frustrating. But be patient, yet persistent. I mentioned some of the resources that I've found. If you find somebody that can really help you along the way to educate you, pick their brain, absorb it like a sponge. I found that these relationships are invaluable. But whatever it is you choose to collect, do your homework. There's unfortunately these days, there's a lot of people out there that want to take advantage of you. Do your homework. Be diligent.
Great advice. Yeah. Well said.
John, thanks for being on. We're down to basically 2 minutes. And Joe, I'm going to hand off real quick to you our first and quickest 2 minute warning. What'd you pick up on today's show?
Some really good advice. If you have a collection that's on the wall, call it a museum. It seems less nerdy. I'm gonna run with that. Thanks, John.
Exactly. And incredible pieces of football history and memorabilia. Great stories behind them. And again, there's still a lot of overlooked stuff in our hobby that can be collected and can be studied, so on and so forth. And it's guys like John that help our hobby in the long run, sharing that information. All right, we're out of time. Thanks for watching. That's the first time I'm saying that.
Yeah.
Also, just to explain real quick, we're in audio on the actual Sports History Network, but we are video and audio on the Sports History Network YouTube channel. So check out both. And this show will be on within a couple of days. Thanks for listening. And again, real quick, if you're not subscribed to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for?
Check out waiting for?
GridironGreatsMagazine.com. Thanks.
John, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you, John.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.